One is leadership, being yourself and leading in your own way, doing things the right way, coming in early, staying late, challenging your teammates, but in the right way because you've earned their trust, because they respect you because you know they have your back and you have their back and that you've put in the work.
The great quarterbacks I've been around have tremendous inner belief in themselves. The more you're around a person, the more you feel that and see that in them. And the ability to unify people and create a common belief.
There's Adam Peters, the general manager of your Washington Commanders, along with assistant GM Lance Newmark, a guy that I'd never seen him before. I don't know that we'll ever see him again. This is Rob Woodfork here on the DC Sports Subtle, alongside George Wallace, the Mel Kiper of the show, and Dave Preston, who's been warned many times by the league to stop tipping picks before they happen. And happy birthday to Dave Preston.
You're too kind.
As we're recording this, he's fans actually taking time out of his birthday to tell do this. You.
Fans of a certain age will know that I go from Randy Gratishart to Randy White.
There you go.
Today.
All right. The Peters, we'll touch on the Peters presser from last week, the pre-draft press conference, what we took from that, who's the pick at number two, and the Commander's blueprint, which I have on WTOP.com, the absolute must-haves in this draft for the Commanders, and we'll cap it off with the Capitals in their playoff run. Ben Raby will join us a little later on to discuss that. But let's lead off with the draft. The Peters presser, I mean, George was there, and the first 7 minutes he spent thanking people like it was the Oscars, which was kind of different.
I was waiting for him to thank us for, you know, talking about it, or to say happy birthday to Don Peterson over here.
Seriously.
Look, it's been a whirlwind since he got here, right? Yeah. Hit the ground running, you get the combine, you get to hire everybody, you got to hire this, got to hire and he just saw us for the first time and just wanted to thank everybody involved.
Hey.
Everybody.
That's a nice guy right there.
Everybody in the building.
And why wouldn't you? Let's be honest.
My big takeaway, though, was he said that he's highly unlikely to trade number two. And that's kind of refreshing because you have a shot at getting one of the blue chip quarterback prospects. Took some heat and sort of explained why they brought in the four top prospects not named Caleb Williams all at once, as opposed to having individualized visits. Now, I think they have already decided who they're going to pick. I think that was just a due diligence thing.
Did you have a problem with it?
No.
The way they did it? I didn't
None.
Either. And I'm
thought
just,
it was kind of cool.
Look, these people that are complaining about everything, you complain about the way they've done things forever, right?
Right.
The way this organization has done things. They do something different. Oh, by the way, they've done it in San Francisco. Bill Belichick said he's done it.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
I see nothing wrong with it. It's not as if they didn't have individual time with the people.
Right.
With
and
the
that's
players.
What, that's what True. He explained.
And you've had that time at the combine. You have to visit. You've done a lot of homework on these guys. I have no problem with them bringing them in to see how they interact in instances like that, in situations where there's a lot of people. See if this person's a leader. See, I have no problem with it. So
right.
People just need to stop. People just look for something to complain and bitch about all the time. It's true.
It is.
Right?
It is. It is. That's the nature of fans. I mean, fan is short for fanatic. So, yeah, you're going to get some fanatical stuff in response to what is a very legitimate way to do it. Because, again, San Francisco, last I checked, been in the Super Bowl a couple times.
Yeah.
So,
right.
more than a couple times.
And to your point, if they, I think they have made a decision, yes. I don't think they had made a decision up until recently. I don't.
Yeah.
And he said to us the other day, barring any other medical, they'd still look at medicals and things like that. So,
right.
barring any last minute there, I think they have made their decision. Now you have Jaden Daniels' agent go out and do that stupid emoji thing about the
Not
reaction
cool.
to that. And now everybody's like, oh, Jaden Daniels doesn't want to play in DC. I don't care.
And that's the thing. This is a draft process.
This is not how this
you
is
go
not,
yeah. where you're selected.
Yeah.
And quite frankly, I don't know that he has the cachet to pull a Manning.
Correct.
And try
or
to
Elway.
Veer himself.
Or Elway.
Yeah. Or veer himself in a direction other than Washington if Washington wants him to be the pick. And here's the other thing. There was a documentary. I don't know if you guys saw this, but there was a documentary about the Buffalo Bills. Like, I don't think you can call it a dynasty because they didn't win any of the four Super Bowls that they went to. But you know, that whole stretch in time where,
right.
you know, they did a documentary on that. And Jim Kelly said when he was going to Buffalo,
mm-hmm.
like, he threw a tantrum over it.
Yeah.
Because it's cold.
He was a Pennsylvania kid who went to the University of Miami because he didn't want to play in the Rust Belt.
Right.
He signed with Houston in the USFL because he didn't want to play in Buffalo.
Exactly. So he said, but now look at how he loves Buffalo. Look at how Buffalo loves him.
Loves him,
right.
So it's like, you know, Jaden Daniels may not like the idea of Washington going in. And again, let me say, we don't have any reports. There's no word as to how he feels about Washington.
He's never come out and said a thing.
Right, exactly. So I'm not saying that he doesn't want to, but he could grow to love it if he doesn't.
Yeah.
And until last year, this organization, who would want to go to Washington?
Well, sure.
It was a dumpster fire. So maybe I'm sure that there's still some, even though there's a new regime in place, I think there's still some residual backlash where it's like there's this aftertaste that it's going to be, this is a long clean that we've got going on here. And I think for at least the time being, free agents and draftees and prospects are going to be, I'm going to be kind of reluctant going to Washington, even though a new regime is in place.
And on that note, The Athletic had a story basically ranking the teams with quarterback that have obvious needs at quarterback, seven teams that have obvious needs at quarterback going into this draft. They ranked Washington last.
Yeah, I don't get that. You tell me that. I forgot to go read that.
I don't see that. It's not worse than the Giants. It's not worse than the Patriots. It's not worse than any of those situations. They put Minnesota number one, and I don't disagree with that. They have an offensive-minded coach. They've got a good infrastructure in place. They got the best receiver in football there. And so they've got a great offensive line. So, yeah, that's if a guy's ready to play, he could go in there and have success right away. And I'm not necessarily saying Washington's that, but they're not last, not worse than the Giants.
I just think that with a defensive coach, with a coordinator that he's not worked with a ton, just tangentially with the offensive line talent, and I use that, with air quotes almost, that's coming back right now. There's questions there. So I can see how you might see Washington is not a good spot for 2024. But I think with this draft, they've got, six picks in the top 100?
Mm-hmm.
And we'll get to this in a bit. But this isn't what I love about the draft is that you have a chance to build an entire roster. What's kind of the quarterback is that shiny object that you flash towards, not realizing, you not only do you need to hit on the quarterback, whether it's Jaden Daniels, whether it's Drake May, whether it's Jimmy Slabotka, you also need to hit on picks 36, 40, 67, 78, 100.
Yeah.
You need to have some offensive line depth out of that. You need to have some other maybe skill positions. You need to have guys on the other side of the field that will help this quarterback when he's not on the field, so he doesn't have to throw 50 times a game in order for this team to be competitive. So I think Washington is a better place than The Athletic says, but if you just looked at in a very, very tiny window, this isn't a good spot. But I think with all the picks, with the new regime, I think this will be a much better spot than a lot of the other places on the list.
It's interesting that people, I guess to your point, it's still a little residual, fine. But it is, and I've used this a lot. It's like a blank canvas, like this right now with this team.
Right.
Last year, Harris and company couldn't do everything because they took over 10 days before training camp. But you do some things. Now you're putting a ton of money into the facility and the stadium. You got hiring these other people. You're trying to find a stadium. You got a new coach, new GM. Like it's literally starting. It's an expansion franchise,
for the most part.
For the most part, yeah.
Yeah.
With uniforms to match.
Right. So to hear people say that, I don't agree with that because it is totally different now. It is night and day in that building around this team.
And there's a mascot named Major Tutty who knocked Teddy Roosevelt over Sunday at the Nats game too. So don't sell yourself short.
Yeah.
Major Tutty. I still have trouble believing that a pig could rise that quickly within the ranks.
Yeah.
Just going to throw that out there.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know what's the new mascot going to be. When they get a new mat, what's the new one going to be?
They're not going to
do
a
new
one. Okay. They're not going to do a new one. Look, the reality is you get a franchise quarterback, it changes the perception of your franchise exponentially.
Agreed.
Who do we think that quarterback is? Because they're going to take a quarterback at two. I mean, that would be the upset of the draft if they don't.
I've got them taking Jaden Daniels second overall. I think I like what he brings to an offense, and I think having been well traveled from Arizona, before LSU, he is a more mature person from the standpoint of he knows what it's like to not be completely successful.
Yeah,
he knows what it's like to be in less than ideal situations. Arizona is not LSU as far as fan interest and quality of the resources that a college football program has. So he knows what the lean years can be like. So I think he's the guy that they need to take at number two.
Yeah, I think that's where all signs are kind of pointing towards now. And this is a time of year where nobody tells the truth at all, but it just seems like if you're comparing the two for me, I look at, he's battle tested too. I mean, he played in the SEC.
Yeah.
He's had more games than Drake May. And, as far as being ready to play, I think now, people say, "Oh well, Drake May's got a bigger upside. You can rest him." If you're going into this, you don't want Marcus Mariota starting the entire year.
No.
So
any part of the year,
right? So I think if you're going that route, I think Daniels is the guy, unless this whole agent thing and not wanting to play here and didn't care for how they brought this in. Unless that just turns Washington the other way and Peters is like, "Well, screw you then." I have no idea. How do you think they take that?
I don't think it did enough damage to ruin that relationship because the agent is the one who's upset. We don't know
correct.
That Jaden is upset.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
I think Jaden is the pick. Yeah. I think Jaden should be the pick.
Yeah.
He's got the most experience. He, of course, as you said, played in the SEC.
Yeah, Mays in the ACC. That's a difference.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, he's not – a lot of people think he's a running quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
He is a – he can pass from the pocket. He's a he's a pass-first quarterback who just happens to have elite mobility.
Correct.
He's not a running quarterback who, he can throw from the pocket sometimes. So he's not going to have as steep a learning curve as, say, Lamar Jackson did when he came out.
Mm-hmm.
I think you can play him right away. I think he's the most – for lack of a better term, plug and play quarterback in this draft.
Right.
And I love Lewis Riddick on ESPN. He says he's the best quarterback in this draft, Caleb Williams included. So,
okay.
I mean, a lot of guys.
Can we trade up to one and get him then?
What's weird? I am glad that they, because I'm not sold on Caleb Williams and all the extracurricular stuff that I've seen.
Right.
We've said that in here. It may not be whatever. But I'm glad they don't have to make a decision.
Yes. Agreed.
On Caleb or another guy.
Right.
Right?
Right.
Yeah.
And so.
Look at that. We agree on something.
There we go.
That's nice.
Beautiful.
It's nice. Happy birthday.
So now that we've got number two settled, here's another question. Do you trade back into the first round for more help? If you want to get an elite pass rusher, if you want to get or elite pass rush prospect, we don't know if any of these guys are going to be
right.
But if you want to get the pass rusher you want, if you want to get the offensive tackle you want, you may not be able to wait until round two. So, do you trade back into the first round for somebody?
I got one other thing for you before you go there.
Okay,
what if all of this stuff with Jaden, has gotten to them? And they're not 100% sold on him, but they're sold on JJ or a Penix or something like that.
You trade back.
Do you trade back? You get first round picks in exchange, and you still get the guy that you really, really want. Then Adam Peters is a genius.
Here's what it would take for me to trade out of that spot and trade out of Jaden Daniels. I would need Minnesota to come to me with their two first rounders that they have in this draft. Remember, they have 11 and 23 this year.
Correct.
You got to give me Darisaw, the left tackle.
Okay.
You got to give me Justin Jefferson.
Oh.
And you got to give me another first round pick. If they do that, let's go.
So I'm saying, what if Kingsbury and Adam Peters, what if they're not sold on Daniels or May?
Then that's your trade chip right there.
And then your fans, you know, fans will lose their minds. But at the same time, if they are not forced to do that, but they do it on their own because they've identified the guy they want, that's not going to be taken two or three. Mm-hmm. And then you could go get extra first-round pick and some help. And get your guy.
Do it.
Here's the thing. All of this is contingent upon they love a quarterback.
Yeah, correct. Yeah.
If you don't love Jaden Daniels, please don't take Jaden Daniels.
Agreed. That's the other thing. Right. Agreed, yeah. Yeah.
So don't just do it because popular consensus. Because
we're like, telling you to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, do it because we tell you.
Well, you should do it. Yeah, if you listen to us. Yeah.
Sure they do.
Would you trade back and get I'm going to give you an example. Chop Robinson.
Yeah,
I think the local kid, he goes to he graduated from Quince Orchard. He is projected to be like a special edge rusher.
We have a chance to bring in another local kid? Awesome.
Yeah,
they work great here.
And that's what I said in my draft blueprint. Yeah. It's just like, I know everybody's kind of skittish about getting a Penn State edge rusher with local ties, but, you know, to get that kid, man, that's – That would be
what
a
would you
run.
Give up for him?
On name value alone, I like having him in. He's almost as awesome as Kool-Aid McKinstry, the Alabama cornerback.
That's actually who
I'd love to see him.
If he falls to the second round, I would take him in the second round.
I think with different boards, and everyone, even though a lot of teams think the same way, I think that a lot of scouting departments think just differently enough that somebody from the top 20 will slip into the second round. Somebody in the Commanders' top 30 will sneak into the third round and they'll pounce on him.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's an offensive lineman, whether it's an edge rusher, whether it's a cornerback or a safety or even a tight end. I don't think they need to make deals, but if they're not sold on a quarterback, by all means trade down. By all means, you know, don't take a quarterback that you don't want, because whoever you take number two overall, you are married to this guy for 5 years.
Right.
Unless he bombs in such a horrible manner that you're gone in four, and so is he.
Well, yeah. Is there a prospect that you feel like they have to go get? Or is there because you watch a lot of college football.
Right.
And so is there somebody in the later rounds? Well, first of all, this is a two-pronged question. Number one, what do they absolutely have to come away with in this draft? And is there a player that you feel like they have to come away with?
I've actually grouped second and third rounds together because, you know, you're getting guys between 30 and 100. So you're getting players who you need to have eventual starters. One of the reasons why the Commanders, Washington, have just been not good the last decade is that I think Preston Smith, 2015, was their last second rounder who became a starter. Now, some years they didn't have a second rounder. Some years they did and they just whiffed completely, or they, you know, they did this or that. So I think you need to come away with between those five picks, 36, 40, 67, 78, 100, you need two offensive linemen, defensive back, edge rusher, and a tight end.
Okay.
From that group, maybe a wide receiver, but you definitely need an offensive weapon.
Yeah.
And I think tight end is the most glaring weakness right now for this team. And when you look at what the passing game can provide, you definitely need some offensive line help. And you need somebody who can get to the passer, especially after what happened last year when they traded a bunch of guys. And you can always shore up a secondary. The two units that you can't mask when they're subpar, offensive line and secondary, they need to bolster both with multiple picks in the top 100 this
year.
My
thing is, you build a team from the line of scrimmage back.
Right.
In my draft blueprint, I don't have them taking a corner until the seventh round. Tar Heap's still the Maryland Terrapin.
He'd be good.
And he has return value. And with the rules changes, with the kickoff and all that, you need a return man. And so where I have them, I think they absolutely have to come away with, obviously, the quarterback up top.
Right.
They need to have a tackle. They need to have an edge rusher. And they need to have a tight end. And I have two picks that are going to come off hyperbolic. This is just a little tease to what's on WTOP.com in my draft blueprint. Caden Wallace, the tackle out of Penn State. Everything I've read about him and everything I've seen about him, this could be a Brandon Sheriff type pick where you take the guy at tackle, you move him into guard, and then he ends up being an all-pro for you. And if you take him at 100, where I have him, that's a home run. For a third round pick.
Yeah.
And then they don't have a fourth rounder. And then I have them with their first fifth round pick. I have them taking the tight end out of Arizona, Tanner McLaughlin. Now, this is a guy who has a lot of what you hear in J.J. McCarthy, the intangibles, the high motor. And this is a guy that, and again, I realize this sounds hyperbolic, this could be Adam Peters' equivalent of San Francisco spending a fifth rounder on George Kittle in 2017. So if you can get that kind of value at picks like that, number one, it gives you the leverage to spend one of those seconds or thirds to move up back into the first round to get one of the elite prospects. Right. And also, it creates the kind of depth getting starters with late round picks. That's something they absolutely have to do in order to get back into the NFC East race. I mean, now it's been a two-horse race between Dallas and Philly. Washington emerges as a real contender if they're able to do that.
Weird thing, and I've got a piece on, up at WTOP.com on the sports page as well, drafting by the numbers over the years.
Right.
Commanders have had multiple fifth-round picks four times in the last 6 years, and they've actually drafted guys who have started for the team, I think, six times in the last 10 years.
Yeah.
Or something along those lines. So they have been able to get to find diamonds in the rough. Unfortunately, they find a lot of rough in the first, second, and third rounds. And I hate to be fixed on certain people because, you know, a Chop Robinson can go 24th or he can go 15th, depending on, say, if a team really loves him and they don't have a pick, say, until the second round or what have you. A guy like Darius Robinson, University of Missouri, edge rusher, you know, maybe he's supposed to go 35th to 40th, but if somebody who doesn't have a pick is picking 33rd or, you know, or you know, they might pounce on him. It only takes one team to start a run on players as well, where we've seen runs on wide receivers or tight ends or, you know, running backs or, you know, things of that vein. And all of a sudden you thought that you were going to get a safety in the fourth round and boom, the top five safeties are already gone when in any normal year they last until the fourth or fifth round. So I like the options that they have at tight end, especially with pick 67, 78, and 100. Was it Cade Stover, Ohio State, is an option for them. I think he is, you know, 75 to 85 on many of the boards. Ben Sanut, Kansas State. Forgive me if I'm butchering that name, or I can't read my own writing. He's a guy in that mix as well that you can get at 100. Or I'm confident enough that their board is done well enough that somebody will fall that some other team has missed on.
Yeah. George Wallace, what positions do they need to come away with, and is there a prospect that you feel like they got
to
get?
No, I don't think it's anybody they have to get. They need to get.
You're not sold on Kool-Aid McKinstry?
Well, and Chop. Chop and Kool-Aid, yeah.
Yeah.
Pork chops and Kool-Aid.
Yeah, I mean, that's a Peter barbecue Brady.
That sounds like a barbecue
that's
in
a
my
barbecue
house,
right there. offensive line they need to address. You just have to get it done, and I think you'll be able to find somebody to contribute right away at that spot. And I mean, because they've done a very good job, I think, in free agency this offseason.
They did.
So you do, now you don't necessarily have to find, I don't want to say starters the right word, but that you can build
contributors.
Depth. You can build depth now in the draft, and that's what you want. Yeah. You don't want to have to rely on hitting on draft picks that have to start from day one. At least that's just my general manager philosophy.
I mean, best case scenario, man, you get the 1981 draft. Washington's 1981 draft.
They did all right.
Draft?
They did all right.
Wouldn't be bad.
For those who were not.
They had a guy named Art Monk?
He was
80. Oh, he was 80.
Yeah.
He was 80.
Yeah, he was 80. 80.
You're right.
Washington's.
Was 81 the draft that had Joe Jacoby as a free agent? Defensive lineman?
I believe he was a free agent.
Darryl Grant?
First round pick, Mark May. Third round pick, Russ Grimm. Fourth round, Tom Flick, Dexter Manley in the fifth round, Charlie Brown in the eighth round, Clint Didier in the 12th round. These are all guys who were bedrock guys. And that's the thing, man. And there's two drafts that I looked at when we were.
Listen to those names.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Those are guys who are in like lower here.
Yeah.
So there's two drafts I looked at going in, and I said, you know what? If Washington gets this draft, this changes everything for them. The 1981 Washington draft and the 1996 Ravens draft. Okay, you remember that draft? They drafted two Hall of Famers in the first round. Jonathan Ogden, fourth overall. Ray Lewis, 26th overall. And it laid the foundation for them to win a couple Super Bowls.
Yeah.
And including 5 years after that draft, they won a Super Bowl.
Yeah, won, yeah.
Their local product, Jermaine Lewis, was a fifth-round pick in that draft and returned a kickoff for a touchdown in that that Super Bowl win, their first Super Bowl win in 2000. So, yeah, if Washington can get a draft like that, I know, easier said than done. But
and you have to wait a little bit to see if it pans out.
Correct.
But, yes.
It takes, unless it's an absolute disaster or an absolute home run, you know, drafts usually take 2 or 3 years to figure out. And the shame net with free agency coming around so quickly, very often teams will cut and run on guys a year or two earlier than they would have 20 years ago because of development.
Right. Yeah, no, you're right.
But who do we have as a long snapper? Do we have a long snapper that
we're trading?
They signed a guy. They signed a guy.
No, but you need long snapper depth.
No. You got to trade up to get one.
No, absolutely not. All right, guys, we're going to take a brief pause. We're going to get Ben Raby in here to talk Capitals after that game one loss in New York. Right back at it here in a moment. All right, guys, we are back. Ben Raby is along with us. He's actually in New York helping with the broadcasting of the Capitals at the Rangers. So he had what we'll just call a front row seat for the game one loss. Would that be accurate?
First of all, and that's why it took us a while for that long break because we couldn't find, because he's in New York. He's not here.
Yeah.
Hey, Ben, let's talk about real quick. How's the atmosphere in the Garden for a Rangers playoff game?
That's the best part of the day, George.
I figured.
The atmosphere in the Garden. That was the best part. I'll tell you what, in all seriousness here, it didn't feel to me, having covered so many Capitals games over the years, home and on the road in various buildings, et cetera, the game itself did not necessarily have the energy that a playoff game typically does. It didn't necessarily have the physicality, the animosity that quickly gets built in. The game itself didn't feel like a playoff game. But the building, MSG, even though it was a Sunday afternoon as opposed to a game, you know, after dark, the atmosphere was great. It was really good. They're having fun in New York, I'll tell you, between the Knicks and the Rangers.
Yeah.
And every block, they're quick to remind you that both teams are in the playoffs.
Because
it happens so often, you know.
Right.
Are you guys staying down? Are you staying close?
Walking distance from the arena,
okay,
yeah.
Okay, good.
I'll tell you something else about New York that I've picked up on. I haven't spent a whole lot of time in these parts over the past couple of years. I know 420 just passed, and not to go off topic, we'll bring it back to the Capitals in a moment, but there is always an energy and a buzz in New York. There is a scent in Midtown, in Times Square, the likes of which I have not, I know these things have been a little laxed over the past few years across the country, but my goodness.
Oh, man.
Are you writing songs now?
You don't have the devil's lettuce in Canada?
Yeah. Live from New York. It's a Monday afternoon here. We're just giving you a little flavor for what's going on in town.
Yeah. I don't remember exactly the street, but it's like three blocks. Best bagel ever. That's the name of the actual spot.
Oh yeah.
It is the best bagel I've ever had.
Oh really?
Unbelievable.
They usually just say it.
I know. I know that. That's what's cool about this. It says it, and it is true.
And they deliver.
Yeah.
Oh man.
Can
the Capitals deliver in this series?
Oh, come on. I'd rather talk about
that. Oh, that was good.
Oh, you don't want to talk about it?
Yeah. Okay, go ahead.
That's all a good segue. I couldn't pass up.
Go ahead.
The game one loss, it was not a great look, but you go into the playoffs. The thing you got to have in hockey is the hot goalie and a lot of playoff experience. The Capitals have that. So, I mean, can they upset the Rangers in this series?
They know what they have to do to win this series or at least make it competitive, make it interesting. They're heavy underdogs, objectively speaking. It's easy to see why when you look at the President's Trophy winning Rangers and sort of this upstart Capitals team that, objectively speaking, maybe played above their weight class to an extent this season and earning that playoff spot on the final day of the season. If they are to win this series or make it competitive, they got to play super conservative. To an extent, they have to play a boring, quote-unquote, low-event brand of hockey. They're not going to necessarily outscore the Rangers by trading chances. They got to hope for a low-scoring game, to your point. You got to lean on the hot goalie. Charlie Lindgren was very good down the stretch. But if the Capitals are going to make the series competitive, you're going to rely on a lot of 2-1, 3-1, 3-2 type of games. And unfortunately for the Capitals in Game 1, bang, 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 in a span of just over 3 minutes, the Rangers scored three times. To try to rally from three goals down in New York against the Rangers, it's a tough hill for the Capitals to have to overcome. So moving forward here, you're looking to generate more offensively. You're looking to lean on Charlie Lindgren, as you have for much of the second half of the season. But again, can't emphasize enough, if there's a recipe to success here for the Capitals, it's to really grind it out, hope you get into the third period, maybe a tie game, maybe a one-goal lead, and just cling on to it, hold on to it, and try to close it out, as they did for much of the second half of the season, especially down the stretch run.
Ben, you had a chance to cover this team throughout the course of the entire season. They split their four-game regular season series with the Rangers. Now, I know it's apples to oranges right now, but how different do the Rangers look in postseason play than their visits to D.C. this year, and other first impressions from you as far as how the Caps were playing and how the Rangers looked on the ice?
Well, the biggest difference for the New York Rangers as opposed to the four regular season meetings, which happened all in a small window of time. Capitals and Rangers played four times in late December and early January. Haven't seen each other since. The biggest difference for New York, and I put the emphasis on big, is they've got a kid, a rookie, 6'7", Matt Rempe, a fourth liner, and he is, as one would expect from a 6'7" kid, big boy. He plays big. He plays a heavy brand, and he's a bit of a cult hero in these parts, has been since he made his debut in late February for New York. He's not afraid to drop the gloves, and yesterday in Game 1, he had a goal, and he was a difference maker in limited ice time on the fourth line. That was one of the storylines in Game 1 for New York and just the series as a whole. The Rangers won the series opener, not necessarily because of their headliners, and they have many of them. They have a lot of high-end talent offensively. They won thanks to some contributions lower down the depth chart, including Matt Rempe and the New York Rangers' fourth line, which contributed with two goals of the four they ultimately finished with. But what I'm getting at is there might be another level from the New York Rangers' headliners, which the Capitals certainly will be aware of entering Game 2. New York won Game 1 and drew first blood in part because of their depth and in part because of the difference that this 21-year-old rookie, Matt Rempe, made, not only with the goal, but also just the physicality and the difference he makes in that regard. He's a challenge. He's a handful that the Capitals are going to have to navigate through in this series.
Is he playing the right sport? 6'7"? That
big. I feel like he missed an opportunity to play tight end in the NFL.
If you can make it in New York like this kid, I keep coming back to the fact, 21 years old, but drops the gloves. His first few weeks in the NHL, he was seemingly getting in fights in every game, but they chant his name at Madison Square Garden, and this is a fourth liner. His jersey sales are tremendous in these parts. Again, he's a little bit of a cult hero, but Peter Laviolette, head coach of the Rangers, they wouldn't play him if he didn't make a positive contribution, obviously, this time of year, and he was a difference maker in Game 1.
Ben, Game 2 Tuesday evening at MSG. Who do you feel the pressure is on the most on this Capitals team if they're going to try to even the series up and send it back to Washington, a new series?
Yeah, the headliners, the big boys for the Capitals. And you look at the veterans and the players with the pedigree and the resumes and those who have had playoff experiences and success in the past. I think this falls to an extent on those guys to, bring the Capitals back into this. I look for the headliners on a power play unit that went 0-for-4 to begin the series. They had 8 full minutes of power play time. They had opportunities to swing momentum their way. They didn't. Alex Ovechkin, for just the fourth time in his postseason career out of 148 games, was held without a shot on goal. I would imagine there are some, as far as the veterans, the core, the leaders, those who have been here before, to elevate their play and maybe drag some of those younger faces in the Capitals lineup with them. They try to claw their way in, back into it.
And that's the thing with, you know, I was going to ask, a lot of teams like this that you sprint to the finish and you do everything you can to get in, and then you kind of, it's a natural letdown. Maybe not letdown the right word, but it's a natural. You exhale after you get in. But there's enough players on this team that have been through this. Do you get the sense that that is how this Caps team approached game one, or is it really just the Rangers are that much a better team right now?
Yeah, the Rangers are a good team. And, yeah. And the funny thing, too, George, is they won the President's Trophy, and there's this thought in the NHL, and the Capitals have been through this in years past. You win the President's Trophy, there's the President's Trophy curse, supposedly, mm-hmm. that you finish with the best record in the regular season, and then you make the leap into the postseason, and you have a big drop-off, and oftentimes it's because if you have the best record in the regular season, in most cases, you don't have much to play for down the stretch.
Right.
You've locked everything up. You had the best record in the league. You won your division, et cetera, and you kind of coast down the stretch. This is an exception. The New York Rangers, they actually did not clinch the division. They did not clinch home ice advantage until their final game of the season. So they literally had something to play for as recently as game 82. You know, the Capitals, you could say, had more to play for because they were fighting to get in the playoffs. But the New York Rangers, you know, they didn't ease up down the stretch, in other words. So they have seemingly picked up where they left off, and now it's for the Capitals to do the same, because the company line from the Cap side of things is they've quote-unquote been playing playoff hockey for a few weeks now, trying to get into the dance. But I'll say, really, the New York Rangers keep coming back to this. That's a formidable bunch. That's a very good team, both ends of the ice, a well-oiled machine, whatever cliche you want to use. That's a good, good team, and the Capitals, who aren't flawless, have to really play a near-perfect game to be able to stay competitive here.
And they've got a great coach, too, on the bench, a guy that you're familiar with, Peter Laviolette. Obviously, things did not work for him here. Things have worked for him there. Was it just a case of him being better suited for the material that he's got to work with in New York, as far as different players peaking and things of that vein? And would Laviolette have any advantage of knowing the Caps in this series? Because there have been while there are a lot of guys who were on last year's roster, a lot of different guys that he didn't have the chance to coach at the NHL level.
Yeah, he actually had a funny line at the start of the series. He was asked that very question about the familiarity coaching against one of his former teams. Now, Laviolette, he is now the first coach in league history to win a playoff game with six different teams. He's well-traveled,
wow.
Peter Laviolette. So he said, when he was asked, at the start of the series, you know, you're coaching against your former team, he laughed. He said, is this really a story? Because if it is, it could be a story every round, given my track record and how well-traveled he is and how many former employers he has. But, to get to the question, is there a familiarity he has with the Capitals? Sure, to an extent. I mean, it works both ways. The Capitals are familiar systematically with how he plays and just, you know, how he structures his team. But I will say, to bring it to the Capitals side of things, that the job Spencer Carberry did this year with the Capitals, he really was the ideal coach, as it turns out, for this team.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll see how it ultimately unfolds in the years ahead and the years upcoming as they make a transition from the aging core to the young guns. But he, you know, Spencer Carberry proved in year one as a head coach, you know, he dealt with a lot this year during the regular season, and now it's a new animal. It's his first year head coach going up against a guy with 20 years plus experience in these situations, and Peter Laviolette. And without going into too much details, Laviolette yesterday, as the home head coach, the home team has the advantage of the matchups. You know, the visiting team puts out their players first, and the home coach can then put out their players. He matched very well, very creatively. That was an experienced head coach behind the bench in game one in Peter Laviolette. He took advantage of the matchups very much to the Rangers' advantage. He looked like a guy who has been here before, certainly, and made most use of that.
All right. Ben Raby, do you have a series prediction other than Capitals?
I hope it goes lengthy.
Are you saying Capitals in seven? Is that what you're doing?
You said it, but, you know, here's hoping that they could keep it competitive. And again, looking for low scoring, grinded out affairs, and really they need to play almost a perfect game.
At the risk of costing Ben paychecks, I'm going to say Rangers in six.
There you go.
Do you have a prediction, George?
I was going to go five.
Five?
Yeah, I think Caps get a game.
Yeah.
But I don't know how much else.
I think they can steal two.
Okay.
It feels like a five-game series, but then again, that's after one. I thought that they would steal one in
Caps in five, Dave. That's
exactly. that's me, yeah. You know, I thought
four
that they,
in a row.
The reverse sweep.
True. No, it's and along those lines, this has been an incredible stretch run by this team where things went against them. And, you know, if they had lost any of those last three games, Ben, they would have been out of the postseason. And I think we're focused on what's going to happen this April. But I think what's going to be nice is that the young guns, as you mentioned, you know, making their moves and what have you, this experience getting into the postseason and playing high leverage games like the ones that they are this week and the ones that they have played the last month or so will help the growth of the young core in years to come.
Yeah, very well said. They're not in the business this week of moral victories. They have made that clear, but I agree with you, Dave. Could be good benefits down the line, but we'll get through this series first and then look ahead to those benefits in the years to come. But certainly they will be there. The team has grown a lot over these past few weeks and months.
All right. That's Ben Raby of the Capitals Radio Network and, of course, on WTOP. You can follow him on X/Twitter. You can follow his exploits on 1500 AM as well on the team coverage on our sister station.
Before we go, Ben, I have some exciting news for you. The press box at Nats Park, they now have red Nationals helmet cups for ice cream. Last year they just had
the
cherry.
Good.
Yeah, last year they just had the cherry blossom. Now we've got red. I'm hoping they'll eventually have Expos helmets, but baby steps.
Right, tricolored.
Steps. Yeah. No. We audible at the line of scrimmage before we go.
Yeah.
Each week on the Nats notebook on the sports page WTOP.com, I highlight a game to watch, game to miss, game to watch this Thursday. Mackenzie Gore pitches the series finale against the Dodgers. It's a 4:05 game. There are no Caps games to worry about because they don't play game three until Friday. Get out to the ballpark or put the game on the TV or on the radio. A chance to see Mackenzie Gore pitch. He has had some good moments so far this year.
Yes, he has. And we had some good moments putting together some draft coverage for you on WTOP.com. Inside the Numbers with Dave and my draft blueprint. Signing off the DC Sports Shuttle, I am Rob Woodfork. George Wallace is off doing a sports cast. Dave Preston and our friend Ben Raby all clapping it up.
Break.
Break.
Break.